Hey, Bible nerds, this is Dr. Manny Arango, and I'm your host for the Bible Department podcast powered by Arma. This podcast follows a Bible reading plan we created to help you read the entire Bible in a year. You can head to the show notes or thebibledepartment.com to download our reading plan and join the journey. Family, welcome to day 187. We're going to continue our trek through the book of Hosea. Today, we're in Hosea 4. 5, 6, 7, and 8. So a good chunk of scripture to read. Honestly, I read it. It went by pretty good. It went by quick. It reads, I don't know, something about poetry just kind of like reads quickly. For anyone who's wondering, my favorite audio Bible is Dwell. So I use it all the time, and they're not sponsoring anything or promoting Arma in any way. But anyway, for anyone who's just curious for a tool that you can use to read the Bible, and that works really well, I love Dwell. So if you've done the reading for the day, good job. If you haven't done the reading for the day, pause the video, stop the audio, don't listen, don't watch, go do the reading. Hosea chapter 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8. All right, like always, I'm going to give you context clues, nerdy nuggets, and I'm going to leave you with a timeless truth. Interestingly enough, for context, actually, the thing that provides context for Hosea chapters 4 through 8 is actually Hosea chapters 1 to 3. So this sign act that Hosea is involved in, where he's married to a woman who has prostituted herself, this woman by the name of Gomer, that is the context for the metaphors that now Hosea is going to use for the next 5 chapters. So the repeated theme over and over and over and over again as you read through Hosea chapters 4 through 8 is prostitution. There's a spirit of prostitution. You love prostitution. You return to prostitution, okay? So like that theme of prostitution is going to get used over and over and over and over again. And the context for that is the first 3 chapters of the book where Hosea enters into a marital covenant relationship with a woman who is drawn to prostitution, okay? So that's actually like our biggest context, okay? So today's episode is really going to focus on a lot of nerdy nuggets, okay? I'm going to give you as many nerdy nuggets as I can. First is that this is what's called a lawsuit oracle, okay? Which means different groups are going to be on trial, okay? Hosea chapter 4 is actually going to start with these words. Hear the word of the Lord, you Israelites, because the Lord has a charge to bring against you who live in the land, okay? A charge to bring against you. So this is a lawsuit oracle. You can imagine it's essentially God bringing a legal case. It's a style of communicating, okay, where God is bringing a legal case against the people, and kind of want to just break this down for you to help you to see the flow of what you're reading. So from chapter 4, verse 1 to 4, God has an issue with normal citizens, okay? They're being accused of faithless, loveless, and not knowing God. This is what Yahweh says, okay? There is no faithfulness, no love, no acknowledgement of God in the land. There's only cursing, lying, murder, stealing, and adultery. So they've literally broken the Ten Commandments. In verse 5, we transition again. Chapter 4, verse 5 to 10, the priests and the prophets are accused of rejecting knowledge of God and ignoring the Torah. And like always, okay, all throughout the Bible, God holds leaders to a different standard. He holds leaders to a higher standard. And then we get verses 11 to 14. And now the cults worshiping foreign gods are accused of worshiping idols and replacing Yahweh worship with pagan fertility rites. So that's verse 11 through 14. I'll read the transition sentence for you. It says, to prostitution, to old wine and new, which take away the understanding of my people. They consult a wooden idol and are answered by a stick of wood. Okay, a spirit of prostitution leads them astray. They're unfaithful to their God. I just want to hone in on that verse right there. They consult a wooden idol and are answered by a stick of wood. Like the language is communicating like, guys, like how ridiculous is this? you have trust in some sticks, man? Like it's made out of wood. Like what is drawing you to this? You may be thinking to yourselves, like, yeah, what is it about cult like practices that are appealing? And I would say the key word here is trust. What do you put your trust in? And although this may sound ridiculous, there are people who essentially have their trust in the modern equivalent of sticks in wood. Like that's what they have their trust in today. One of the things that confuses me to no end are people who have faith in chakra stones, people who burn sage, like in their house. And it's like, your faith is in sage, homie? Sage? And if you think that like God has no issue with it, then why would God have an issue with sticks and wood in the Old Testament? God doesn't have an issue with the thing. He has an issue with the fact that you think you need it. And God says, hey, like, you can't do anything in addition to me and still have me. Nothing at all. Like, this is the equivalent of somebody saying, like, because remember, adultery is the theme that we're dealing with. This would be the equivalent of somebody saying, like, oh, I didn't cheat on my wife. I was just texting, you know, and it's like, nah, homie, like, that's cheating. Like, you don't draw the line at sex. You draw the line at anything, whether it be major or minor. It doesn't matter. Like, all of it is not okay because you are in faithful, loyal, covenant relationship with another person. So I would 1,000%, like, if you want a modern equivalent to this, it would be crystals and burnous sage, like chakra stones, crystals and burnous sage. 1,000% are cultic rituals that if you're a believer are not, like, why would you put your trust in that? Your trust is in the Almighty God. And you're going to see this theme actually develop as we keep moving. Chapter 5, verse 1 and 2, verse 10, verse 13. The thing that's going to be the lawsuit oracle is going to be spoken against. The ruling classes, royalty, are going to be accused of moving boundary stones, actually. So this is one of the moments, okay, in Hosea where injustice is actually going to rear its head again, okay? So this is verse 10 of chapter 5. Judah's leaders are like those who move boundary stones, which means Judah's leaders are unjust, okay? Moving a boundary stone is how you delineated what's my property versus my neighbor's property. It's a boundary. And this is, leaders are not supposed to move boundary stones, okay? Property is, the land got divided up by God in the book of Joshua, and every tribe has allotments of land. And so it's not my job to move a boundary stone. This is deeply rooted in injustice. So in verse 11, Ephraim is oppressed, trampled in judgment, intent on pursuing idols. I am like a moth to Ephraim, like rot to the people of Judah. So Ephraim is going to be a repeated word. Okay, so here's just another nerdy nugget. Ephraim is going to, so this is the tribe of Ephraim. Remember, Manasseh and Ephraim become the tribes that replace the tribe of Joseph, because Ephraim and Manasseh are the sons of Joseph. And so in the north, Ephraim is actually the strongest tribe, in the same way that the tribe of Judah is the strongest tribe in the south, okay? So Ephraim is obviously Judah's nephew, okay, in the story that all this comes from. So the tribes are named after the sons of Jacob, but then the second to youngest son's name is Joseph. He has two boys, Ephraim and Manasseh. So Ephraim is the reason that it's like Ephraim and Judah is because Ephraim is referring to the northern kingdom, but the most influential tribe of the northern kingdom, which is the tribe of Ephraim. Let's keep kind of going with some nerdy nuggets here. We're going to get to chapter 4, verse 15, and Hosea is going to flat out say, like, do not go to Gilgal. Do not go up to Beth-Aven, and that's Bethel. Okay, so for anyone who's like, oh, what's like that name? I'm not familiar with that name. Okay. Here's the irony. Okay. Hosea tells Israel not to enter these places, both of which are connected to Israel possession of the promised land. So like these places should be like cities that bring back all this symbolism of like God's faithfulness. But now they're connected to idolatry, which is really, really, really sad. It was at Beth Aven or Bethel where God promised Jacob that the land where he slept would belong to his descendants. Remember, this is Bethel is the place where Jacob sees a ladder. This would be Jacob's ladder. He probably sees a ziggurat and he sees angels ascending and descending. Gilgal was the place the tribes of Israel gathered to begin their conquest of Canaan. So Bethel and Gilgal should actually trigger all of these thoughts of God's faithfulness. They should be monuments, like national monuments of great pride and joy. But now they are monuments of like shame and guilt and idolatry. Hosea chapter 4, verse 15, do not go to Gilgal. Do not go to Bethel. And here's just a theme along the lines of like that theme of trust. Two things that I want to say. The first is that syncretism is idolatry. And syncretism is taking anything from culture and like mixing it in with Christianity. That's syncretist. So a lot of the people who are being accused of prostitution or adultery or idolatry, what they're doing is they're worshiping God and Baal. And God demands exclusive worship, okay? Loyalty, faithfulness. Baal doesn't care if you worship multiple gods, but Yahweh cares that you only worship the one true living God. And so syncretism is, I go to church on Sunday, but I also burn sage. You know, I go to church on Sunday, but I also use my crystals and my chakra stones. And it's like, got it. So you're mixing, okay? This is called syncretism. You're mixing. You're trying to mix Christianity with, you know, African traditional religious experiences. You're trying to mix, you know, Christianity with native, you know, spiritist practices. Like you're trying to take Christianity and instead of being a purist and going, yeah, no, I'm going to be a purist, you're actually mixing it with other stuff. And it's because you don't trust that Jesus is enough. You don't trust that God's enough, that the Bible's enough, that this is enough. You think that God needs help or assistance, or he needs your kind of, he needs your practices. And God's like, man, I don't need any of that. So I want you to like see this theme is not just with idolatrous or religious practices, but this theme is also the reason that God's upset about Israel's political practices. Okay, listen to these, and you'll see the theme emerge. This is Hosea 7:11. Ephraim, so that's Israel, is like a dove, easily deceived and senseless. Now calling to Egypt, now turning to Assyria, calling to Egypt for what? Help. Turning to Assyria for what? Help. I need to be rescued. I need to be saved. And then I need you to read Hosea 5:13. Then Ephraim turned to Assyria and sent to the great king for help. Okay, then I want you to read, Hosea 4:12. My people consult a wooden idol and a diviner's rod speaks to them. A spirit of prostitution leads them astray. They are unfaithful to their God. Okay, so for the people, they're trusting in wooden idols and a diviner's rod. For the leaders, they're trusting in Assyria and Egypt. The thing that is the common denominator here is trust. Who do you trust? Stop trusting in horses and chariots. Stop trusting in Baal. And if we translate that into the modern age, there's just stuff we trust. Hey, stop trusting in the government. Stop trusting in, you know, your job. Stop trusting in this stuff. We are quick to say, oh, it's ridiculous that they would worship idols, but idolatry is not about how you express that idolatry. It's about a distrust on the inside that says, yeah, I don't think God's enough. I don't think that God, Jesus, the Holy Spirit, I don't think Christianity is enough. And God needs assistance. God needs help. And God says, that is absolutely the most offensive thing you could ever say to me. I would say as we transition to the end of the episode, that's my timeless truth, is that as you read through this stuff, I don't just want you to go, oh man, they don't have it together. God's mad at them. I want you to think, do I fully trust in the Lord? Like, where do I stand in terms of my exclusivity in whom I trust, in whom I place my trust? Where does my trust come from? And I'm preaching to me. Do I trust in speaking engagements or do I trust in God? Do I trust in how many subscribers we have as a business, or do I trust in God? Do I trust in my ability to hire the right people, or do I trust in God? Like, what do I trust? Because idolatry is rooted in me not being able, not having giving soul exclusive rights to God in terms of the resources that I'm going to choose to trust. Last little bit that I'll say, this is actually really, really helpful, is the state of Israel towards its end is almost unrecognizable from the picture of Israel in our minds. Okay, Jeroboam II's reign was one of extreme unfaithfulness to Yahweh in his Torah, but it all started with the first Jeroboam, who decided to worship Yahweh in his own way. He just didn't trust. He didn't trust to worship God and just be literal. Just stick to the book, man. He chose to deviate. He chose to make small decisions. This decision doomed Israel and led to this chaos. This is the danger of idolatry, where worship for our own sake leads. So trust, trust, trust. Trust leads to patience. Man, trust leads to so many things. You gotta trust. You have to place your trust in God and say, Lord, like, I trust you. I trust you even in the middle of a famine or a drought. And I trust that you can provide for the real needs of my family. I think sometimes it's easy to villainize these people, but it's like, yo, if it hasn't rained and your kids are hungry, like, you start to compromise. And the moment we can't empathize with the character of the Bible, I think that we're unable to really learn something from them. And so they're not idolatrous for any reason than they are placing their trust for real needs in the hands of gods who cannot meet those needs. And the kings of Israel are putting their trust in the horses and chariots of Egypt because they're scared that their people are going to experience violence against them. And so they reach out for these alliances. And God says, man, every time you trust in foreign powers to help you, it always leads to the thing you were scared of actually coming to pass, which means fear has to be conquered, in that you can't keep obeying your fears, because ultimately, if you keep obeying your fears, the very thing you're scared of will come to pass. And so that's our timeless truth. And that is Hosea chapter 4-8. Tomorrow, we will be back for day 188. And we've got Hosea, let me make sure I got the right thing, Hosea chapter 9-11 tomorrow. If you're on a streak, don't break it. Whatever you do, don't break your streak. If you're not on a streak, let's start one. I'm so proud of you. I love you. I'll see you right here for tomorrow's episode. And can't wait to continue our trek through the book of Hosea and the prophets in general. Love y'all. Peace. Thank you so much for joining me on the Bible Department podcast. If this episode was helpful, it would mean the world to me if you'd give us a follow, rate and review the show, and don't forget to share. You can learn more about the show at thebibledepartment.com and find us on Instagram at the Bible Department. If you want to dive deeper into the Bible, you can get free access to our library of courses at thebibledepartment.com. We'll see you back here tomorrow. What if I told you that what you're learning in this video was just the tip of the iceberg? The Bible Department is actually powered by Arma. What is Arma? I'm so glad you asked. Arma is an online subscription-based platform that we designed to help people
everyday people learn the Bible for themselves. We started Arma so that anybody, anywhere could have access to trustworthy and entertaining Bible and theology content. In addition to this podcast, we have over 60 courses on individual books of the Bible, on theology topics, and on some hot topics like homosexuality, tithing, and women in ministry. But really, Arma is a community of people that I've gotten to know, a community where thousands of people are currently finding family, asking questions, and nerding out on the Bible together. If you want a community to read the Bible with you this year, or if you want to dive into some deeper theological content, or if you want more exclusive access to me and the entire Arma team, how about you go to thebibledepartment.com. I'll be sure to post the link in the description of this video. Let's make this your year to become a Bible nerd.